then we'll be all right. Okay, we finished yesterday Shiras Dvora, but before we can move on to Perek Vav, there's a number of items we need to discuss to round out the points that the Shir is bringing out over here. Let's see, where do we want to start? I want to talk about Yoel. Because those activities were quite unique. And Dvorah mentions, let's go back to that pasuk. In pasuk Chav Dalet, Dvorah mentions about Yoel, Tvorach mino shim Yoel eshes chever hakeni, that Yoel, the wife of chever hakeni, she should be blessed more so from all women. Minashim ba'ohel tvorach, she should be blessed even more than the women in the tent. And Chazal tell us, who does this mean? That she is greater than Sarah, Rivka, Leah, Rachel, who all were in tents. She was greater than all of them. So the question has to be asked, you know, how could she be greater than the Imahos? In what way was she greater than the Imahos? If anything, it looked like something not necessarily so much greater. So that's one aspect. Then there's another aspect we have to look at. The nature of a woman, the Gemara Megillah says, is Nashim Rachmonios Hein. Women are merciful. They're Rachmonios. They're merciful. Yoel doesn't look too merciful here. Right? And however, and really the genius of this Shira is how Hashem contrasts one woman from another woman. And one woman who appears to be very cruel, and that's Yoel, who she's described as, you know, being engaged in all kinds of intimate activities with Sisera and then killing him. Versus a mother who's crying for her son and is worried about her son, and she's comforting herself and trying to find ways how her son will return. And yet, the first one is the one who is blessed more than all the imos and the mothers. So the explanation is as follows. The Rambam in Mor Nevuchim, he says that, yes, what made the matriarch special? What made our mothers special? And what made the patriarchs? It's the same idea. What made the matriarchs, what made them so special? Is that even though they were involved in very mundane physical things in their lives, they were shepherds, they would take in guests, and these are all, you know, day-to-day things in life. But even though they did that, they were uniquely focused completely 100% on Hashem. Everything else they did was totally external to that primary focus. If you would look at Avram and take a picture of him at any time in his life, you'd say, oh, he's taking such nice care of the sheep. You know, he's taking such nice care of his guests. What a nice man. But the truth is, and you'd figure also, and he must be very focused on watching the sheep and very focused on his guests. But the truth is, he was 100% totally focused on Hashem. Never desisted from his mind. Everything was Hashem at every moment, mamish. And while I'm thinking about Hashem, and while I'm totally connected to Hashem, at the same time I watch the sheep, that's just like, Mela, I'll do that too. I'll do that too. You could maybe compare that to people who are now, you know, talking on their cell phones while driving a car. Right? I mean, what would you say is the main thing they're doing? right? The main thing is they're talking to the other person. Okay, now you can do two things at a time. You could talk to a person and you could drive a car. And you could really be focused on what you're saying to that person, right? But you're also driving the car. So the others were on a cell phone with Hashem 24/7. Your mom is totally with Hashem. And everything else was external. And that would be most likely the same thing with the matriarchs. Now, Yael goes even further. Yael goes further that she even could think of Hashem totally, not only when she's cleaning the kitchen, not only when she's cooking dinner, but she could think of Hashem totally when she's doing an act that externally is a complete avera. And this is what the Gemara says, that godel avera lishma, greater is a person who does an avera lishma. Lishma means totally for the sake of Hashem, without any self-interest at all. It's greater for that than a person who does a mitzvah shelo lishma, a mitzvah without doing it for the sake of Hashem. And why? Because it's very simple. It's a very mind-boggling concept. The whole point of a mitzvah is to connect you to Hashem. So what the patriarchs did is that when they were doing mundane things, they were still connecting to Hashem. There's different levels. You'd figure when a person does a mitzvah, you should be connected to Hashem. That would be a given, right? You're putting on tefillin. Why are you putting on tefillin? Because Hashem told you to put on tefillin. So you should be thinking about how Hashem told you to put on tefillin. Why are you putting on the tefillin? You should have no other reason and no other thought should be in your mind when you're putting on tefillin. It's for only one reason. Hashem loves me, and because He loves me, He gave me many ways to connect to Him, and one of the ways to connect to Him and to feel His presence by putting on tefillin. So you'd figure that would be the time where a person would be most lishma. Okay, now that I'm working in the fields, you know, it's something that's not directly connected to Hashem, so you'd think, okay, maybe he's going to do it, but he might not be thinking of Hashem. Because it's already one step removed from a mitzvah, right? If you're in shul, I mean, it'd be a good chance to think you're thinking about Hashem when you come into shul, right? But when you're in the fields, it'd be a little more difficult. Certainly when you're doing an avera, you're probably not thinking of Hashem at all. So what we're being told. So now what shows the greatest level of a person? When he's thinking of Hashem, when he's doing a mitzvah, when he's thinking of Hashem, when he's watching the sheep, when he's thinking of Hashem, when he's doing an avera.
Doing an avera.
Right. Because that the activity is so ugly. Yeah. It is so externally so far removed. It's anti-Hashem. And to be totally focused on Hashem when you're doing that, now that is an incredible level. That's an incredible level. Now, of course, it ultimately wasn't an avera. But this is all part of what we're learning in this week's Parsha, where Yaakov Avinu, last week's Parsha, this week's Parsha, Yaakov Avinu represents Tiferes, the third mystical sphere, Tiferes. Okay, you want mysticism, so it's a Tiferes. And Tiferes means you blend Chesed and Gvura simultaneously, or as Rabbi Nachman says, you know exactly when to push the Chesed switch, you know exactly when to press the Gvura switch. So that is what Yaakov was, and that's based on understanding what MS is, understanding what the truth is. And if I recall, Shelly, it was a number of years ago we struggled with this issue, where we were trying to show, look in this week's parsha, Yaakov Avinu is lying, and he's saying, I am the firstborn to his father, and he's putting on sheepskins, and like, what are you doing? So we brought from Redessler that, you know, there's truth on what's in front of your nose scale, and then there's what we call a global truth that's more encompassing, a much broader reach. And the real truth is not what's in front of your nose, but it's what includes every facet of the situation, that it should be to the best way, in the most honest way. So when Esav is parading around as a virtuous tzaddik to his father, and he fools his father to the extent that the father's about to give him a blessing which, if he gets this blessing, would be disastrous for the world. Right? So now, and Yaakov hears that this is what's going to happen. And the only way to get it away from Esav is by dressing up in Esav's clothes and saying you're Esav. So Yaakov was thinking exactly like Shelley was thinking. And he said, how can I do that? That's not honest. Yeah, but he's going to... I can't do that. It's not honest. But Hashem was teaching Yaakov, if you don't take it away from him, you're the most dishonest person. If you let a person go around masquerading as a tzaddik and you can see it and you could have stopped it and you didn't stop it, what's the bigger lie? The bigger lie is that a Russia should have all the brachas in the world and have control of the world? Or is it a big lie to really say, you don't deserve the brachas, I deserve the brachas? And even though, you can say, but he wants to give it to Esav. Doesn't matter. You know what? There's bigger truths in this world. And Yaakov was resisting that. He said, there's no way I could do that. Right? And this is what Yaakov had. He was a man of impeccable truth. But he just, again, as all the patriarchs were blazing the trail, Hashem had to show them that, you know, truth, I know you're good at truth, but you need to understand what godly truth is beyond human truth. So therefore, godly truth means is that it has to be totally emes on every aspect. So Yaakov's saying, well, I don't understand. So you're going to tell me that Esav doesn't deserve the bracha. Okay, but still I lied. So it's not godly truth in every aspect. You know, it's like the guy who says the white lie. The wife comes in with a very ugly outfit and she says to the husband, dear, I bought it. It was final sale. What do you think about it? So the last thing a husband should say is, would you really want the truth? Never say it to your wife. Do you really want the truth? Because they don't. Well, let me reframe that. They want the truth the way they understand the truth to be. Just like a husband wants the truth the way he understands, right? Because they're invested in this garment that they bought. So they obviously bought it because they thought it was appropriate. Now, of course, so I have to be emes. The emes is it's lousy. It's about one of the worst things you ever bought, dear. So it might be true, but your marriage isn't going to hold up. And it's more important to have a good marriage than to tell her about what the clothing is worth. And the truth is, you can say words that aren't a lie.
Now that's a dress.
Yes, now that's a dress. Yehudis is lying. Now that's a dress. That's true, it is a dress. That's for sure a dress. And when that person hears it, they feel good that you said, now that's a dress. Right? So Yaakov had to learn what this was. There's greater truths. And ultimately, what panned out, it was 100% true what he did. Because as we've said, that since Esav gave up his role, each brother had his designated role. Yaakov was supposed to be the person who learns a lot of Torah and teaches a lot of Torah. And Esav is the man who's able to deal with the wicked people and take them away to not hurt the Jews. So at the time that Yitzchak wanted to give the brachas, Esav was not living up to that role. Now Yaakov didn't live up to Esav's role either. Yaakov lived up to his role. There's a big, big gap. No one is living up to Esav's role. And what Yaakov would learn two parshas later is that he is the one to take over Esav's role. So when Yitzchak blessed Esav, the real emes is, Yitzchak was blessing a child who would have the role of Sur Meira, stay away from evil. And that's the bracha that he wanted to give his child. And if he gave it to Esav, that would be a lie. But he could give it to Yaakov now on, we'll call it on the layaway plan, that Yaakov can take the blessings of how to be the person who can resist evil and destroy evil. He'll take it now on the terms that in the next 20, 30 years it will develop into that. And then that bracha will be exactly the right person. Now this is a much broader understanding of emes. Much broader. You say, but the guy lied. He said, he didn't lie. He was stopping the biggest lie. And he would have to live up to everything he said. That I am like Ace of your Bechor because I'm going to have to live up to it. So it's 100% true, but at the time it doesn't look that way. This is this Midah. And that's really what Rachamim is. Rachamim is that way. If you're able to know exactly when to have kavura, when to have chesed at each time. So now, and this was extremely difficult for Yaakov. And the same thing with Avram and Sarah. Is, as we've mentioned many times, how do you know you've acquired a midah? How do you know you've acquired a midah? How do you know that you are a kind person? So you can say, what are you talking about? I always do chesed. That doesn't mean anything. It means absolutely zero. It means that God endowed you with a strong preference to do kindness. So it's not that you do kindness, but kindness does you. Kindness controls you. That doesn't mean you're virtuous. That's what Rav Huttner brings down. That doesn't mean you're a virtuous person. It means that, you know, you were born that way, so you follow your nature. Following your nature is not a virtuous thing at all. Controlling your nature is a virtuous thing. So the people who are they always help everybody all the time, and they don't know how to say no. They're not kind people. They're not kind people. Their kindness of what their inborn trait is what's doing it. The person himself is doing nothing. He's just following what his nature is. So for some people, God gave him a nature to be kind. For some people, he gave him a nature not to be kind. So what do you get credit for? If God created you to be kind, and you're being kind, so what do you get credit for? You didn't do anything. That's what Hashem made you. But how do we know you are the owner of that kindness? It's when you know when to say no. Because if you're kind to the person you shouldn't be kind to, then you're not being kind, and you never were kind. That was the whole test of Avram, to know when to say no to kindness, to know to throw your shmuel out of the house. If you can throw your shmuel out of the house, then I know when you take care of three Arabs, then you are being kind, not your nature is being kind. You're being kind because you decided that this is the appropriate behavior at this time, and not because you're going on automatic pilot. And the same thing with Gevurah and all the midas that are there. So, and now why are you doing that? Only one reason. Because this is the Ratzon Hashem. In other words, when you make these decisions that, let's say you're naturally kind, and then you say, okay, and in this situation I will not be kind. Let's say you have that predisposition to be kind. And I say, but now here's the place not to be kind. So why are you doing that? Only for one reason. Because Hashem said so. Hashem said, do not be kind to cruel people. Do not give the Palestinians a state. Hashem does not want them to have a state. Because then they will only kill Jews. That's for sure. Oh, we've got to be kind if there's Rachmanis on them. No. There's a state there that will destroy the Jewish people. And you know what? That is not kindness. Right? Now, that's very hard for people who think they should be kind. I want to be kind. I want to be kind. You have to control your kindness. Right? So that's what's happening over here. So the fact you have midos, and to say, oh, you've got such good midos, you have such good character, isn't measured by what you naturally have. And that's why I think people should, you know, as they speak, and they like to say praises about people in public, you know, if you talk about what their natural midos are, you're really not praising them. No. You're not praising them at all. And people, you know, eat it all up. Oh, look what he's saying about me. He's saying I'm so kind, I'm so this, I'm so that. Really, it's not a praise at all. Really saying Hashem made you kind, and that's all. And you're so foolish enough to think that you deserve any of that credit. You know, you like to be kind. So whatever you like to do, you work hard at. It's not, what the rabbi should say when he prays, he says, I want you to know this person really is unbelievably kind. I know many times they weren't kind to people and they shouldn't have been kind to them. Now that would be the emissar. That would be the truest praise. But people wouldn't understand it. They don't understand the last thing we've been speaking for the last 15 minutes. What kind of kindness was the rabbi saying about him? I guess the rabbi doesn't like this person. No. He really is saying they were master of kindness. I've seen them say no when they're supposed to say no. You understand? But people just can't handle that. But that's the emes. That is the emes. You see, a person has to contend with the situation that he's in and act accordingly. So now, This is what's difficult. You're in a certain situation that demands that you turn on the kindness switch. Now, maybe that's easy for you because you're generally kind. Fine, that's not a problem. But you're going to turn around the next minute in a situation that says you're not supposed to be kind. Now you got to turn on the switch and not be kind. Right? You're a person who really, you love people, right? And now your kid did something really terrible. And now if you're a good parent, you will discipline the child in whatever way he needs to be disciplined. You're going to have to withhold some type of kindness and you're going to have to discipline him. And everyone says, I can't. You know, I just can't. I love them so much, I can't do that to them. So now they're not kind at all. Because their nature is controlling them. So you're not a kind person. Your kindness is your nature, but it's not who you are. You are the decisions you make based on what Hashem wants you to do. So if you're in a situation that requires not to be kind, that then you're doing the ruts on Hashem means don't be kind. And then that means I really am kind. You with me? So this is what Devorah is saying over here. If you just go to CNN and get the scoop, and you'll say, wow, such unexpected results from the battle here. Women generally known for their kindness. Their leader, Yael, has turned into a brutal warrior. I guess there's been a shift in the understandings of the Jewish woman, and she really is some kind of a warrior who's able to engage seven times with intimacy before she knocks the guy's head off. This is the new breed of Jewish woman. This will be how CNN would type this up. So Devorah, in her prophecy, I say you don't understand what you're seeing. What you're looking at, you don't understand what you're seeing. This woman is kinder than the matriarchs. She's more connected to Hashem than the matriarchs. This is the biggest chesed that anyone can do. Because when you're dealing in a situation, imagine, let's substitute the word Yael for Hitler. Cicero. Chasson. Cicero, let's just take the word Cicero out, put the word Hitler in. Okay, now, you get a chance to knock off Hitler. Yes or no? After Rachmanis on the guy. Nebuch. He had the whole world on his head. Yeah, he wants to cleanse the world. He wants social Darwinism. He's mamish such a tzaddik. He's losing the war. Terrible. They've lost France. They've lost North Africa. North Africa. My mamish in a bunker somewhere. I'll find him. We'll find a way to give him political exile in some country because. You know, he still is a great statesman. What are you talking about? What kind of speeches the guy could give? You know, you have to have reverence for his ability to spellbind an audience. He has a God-given talent. I think we really should give him the Nobel Prize, frankly. Because of him, the world got out of the Depression. Because wars always get you out of depressions. Right? Rachmanis is in a bunker somewhere. No, what you do is you kill him right away. Because of him, 50 million people died. Because of him, how many millions of orphans, how many millions of widows? Because of him. He's poison. You have to kill him. I can't. I'm Jimmy Carter. I'm a pacifist. I only can put raised peanuts on a farm. I can't hurt anybody. Talking about. He's a murderer. You kill him. Finished. And if you can't kill him because you're a weak woman, I mean, relatively to him physically, the guy's a warrior. His sister's a warrior. So what's Yael already? You know, 140-pound Yiddish mama? I mean, nothing against that, but they weren't known for being weightlifters, Jewish women. They weren't known for being warriors. She couldn't even pick up the mallet. Okay? But she knows one thing. That as long as this guy is alive, there is no salvation for the Jewish people. It's not possible. So she understood in her Bina Yisera, right, that says, this guy's got to be taken out, and now. This is the day. He's on the run. You know, it's like they're pounding away at Gaza City. Now's the time to kill Arafat. Now. or in the '70s when they let him, you remember that infamous picture where he goes on the boat, across the Mediterranean to where Tunisia, wherever he went to, Tripoli, whatever. Like you had him right there. Finish him off. Bye bye.
They were protecting him, the Israelis.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It wasn't that they killed the guy. You know how many more, you know how many people died because of the Israeli decision to not kill him? How many Jews got bombed in pizza shops? Because you didn't kill the guy. But no, we give him the Nobel Prize. You believe in peace. It's crazy. It's crazy. So they're not kind. The Israelis are not kind people. They're not kind. Their media is kind. But not them. They're not kind. They didn't understand this message over here. So Yael understood the kindest thing I could do to the world, if I have mercy on future Yiddish mamas and little children, is I've got to kill him. And what's it going to take to kill him? Hand-to-hand combat is not going to work. You know, he's a very clever... Cicero, if he was a general, he was a clever snake in the grass. You know, he'll rest up for a few hours, get his strength, go into hiding, he'll go into a cave, they'll never find him, he'll pop up 5 years from now, he'll train a new army. We're never going to be free from these guys. Now, as it's called, the Shas HaKosher, it's the auspicious moment. He's on the run, he's tired. I can finish him off. There's only one way I can finish him off. I got to seduce him. I got to live with this pig. And then I'll be able to kill him. Now, you think she had a lot of enjoyment from being with him? It's the most repulsive and disgusting thing she probably ever did in her life. Can you imagine? Imagine a real Hasidish girl. Like, imagine a Hasidish girl in Borough Park who doesn't even talk to a boy. You know, and it would have to do such a thing in order to save the Jewish people. It's disgusting, repulsive. But you know what? This is the will of Hashem. The will of Hashem is what? What did the Gemara say at the end of the Shira? Ken yovdu kol eivecha Hashem. The enemies of Hashem should be killed. He's an enemy of Hashem. And you have to kill an enemy of Hashem. There's only one way to kill him. I'm going to have to seduce him and then kill him. So killing him is the greatest kindness you could do to the world. What did Yael do? Yael, she was thinking of Hashem every moment. And only if you could think of Hashem could it bring such a moral, refined woman, a tzaddikus, only someone who's thinking of Hashem would sleep with such a behemoth. Because it's the ratzon of Hashem. The ratzon of Hashem means you have to do things that are disgusting to you. But you know what? This is what's going to save thousands of people. That's what you have to do. And that's the end of it. And that is a person who has rachmanis. It's rachmanis on every future orphan and widow. Because that's why she did what she did. You understand? And that makes her greater than the Imahos. Sarah never had to sleep with another man. And that was a whole test. That twice she was taken. But she wasn't violated. But you can imagine, Sarah never had to. Sarah, what did she have to do already? Okay, not taking away from her, chas v'shalom. But compared to what Yael did, what'd she have to do? Say Tehillim for Avram when he went to the battlefield. Okay. Have Emunah in Hashem, even though she doesn't have any children. What takes more Emunah? You don't have any kids, and to believe that one day you'll have kids, or to sleep with a pig? Because that's the Ratzon of Hashem. What takes more Emunah? One is passive. Well, you got a Chachik Hambrera, you have a choice. You don't have any kids. You believe in Hashem, we'll give you kids. What else are you going to do? Right? So, or no, you got to sleep with this guy. Now, it's more than that. You know, when Esther, let's go switch events. When Esther tells the Jews to pray for behalf, when she goes to Achashverosh, when she's not bidden, she says, V'cheshir avadati avadati. And as I am lost, I am lost. And Chazal say, what does that mean? That now when she goes, you know, understand, Achashverosh took her to be a wife. She didn't volunteer for this job. So, and she was married to Mordechai, but nobody knew this, right? So now, during the time she was in the palace, and Achashverosh was sleeping with her, would she one day be permitted back to Mordechai or not? So yes, because it's all against her will. But now she is going to the king unbidden. She's going to the king unbidden. And she obviously, if the king's going to give her anything, she's going to have to give him something. She says, Kasher avadati avadati, as I'm lost, I'm lost. Mordechai, I'll never be with you again. To save the Jewish people, I'm going to have to be with him. And now I'm voluntarily doing it, so I'll never be with you again. So, you don't think the same thing happened with y'all? Chevra Keni, Aisha's Chevra Keni, she will no longer be with her husband. Right? And with all what that means, you know, being with your soulmate and all those things, all the spiritual benefits that go with being with your husband, she's finished. So only somebody who's totally thinking about Hashem would do such a thing. That is really Avera Lishma. Right? And of course, you have to have wise judgment to know when to do it. And you have to seek counsel and don't make these decisions on your own. Okay, the women in this parsha seem to be the ones who really understood what Bini Yaseira was. You didn't understand what Bini Yaseira was. And she didn't have a lot of time to make this decision. Right? So this was the ultimate chesed. Now, contrast that to the mother of Sisera. Oh, she's crying. Oh, what a wonderful mother. She's crying and crying over her son. Over who? It's Hitler's mother is crying. Oh, my God, please help little Adolf. That he should pull out of World War, and he should win this war. Oh, Hashem, please help Adolf. Little Adolf, my little child. He's so sweet. Let him kill more Jews, please. What was the mother's sister crying for? That he should be alive. Why? So that how many orphans and how many widows did Sisera make? And she's crying, and as she's crying, yeah, it's probably not so bad. He's probably raping a bunch of women now, that's why he's late. So I shouldn't have to worry so much. Oh, please, I hope he'll be fine. So outwardly, right? So CNN takes a look at these Palestinian women after their kids blow themselves up and they're crying, oi, we have to give them their own state. Look at the suffering they're having. If we gave them their own state, they'd be so happy. You've been teaching your kids to blow up people. No, they're freedom fighters. They've been abused all their lives by these terrible Israelis. We even have a UN commission report testifying to the fact that they're the most inhuman people around. Right? So it's a crazy world. Crazy. So Torah is saying, no. Sisera's mother was, you know, she may have externally done acts. You can imagine if you would have just walked by and see the mother's sister, she's out there crying, you'd have rahmanas for her, wouldn't you? If you didn't know anything else. How can I help you, ma'am? You seem to be so distressed. You seem, it's my son. Oh, yeah, he might be dead. Oh, I feel so bad for you. Oh, who is your son? Oh, he's Adolf Hitler. Huh? What? What are you crying about? It should be a yontif if he dies. Right? So that's the contrast. It's so sad. It's so sad how... Okay, I'm not picking on women, chas v'shalom. I mean, you see the Torah is glorifying the women here. The Jewish woman versus the non-Jewish woman. But unfortunately, how many Jewish women have worn the clothes, who are wearing the clothes of non-Jewish women? Who are wearing the clothes of non-Jewish women and are picking up what society tells them to do. You know, and where what real rachmanis is and what real machmanis isn't. And I don't want to get into it. People get offended and they get angry at me. So I leave it up to people to understand on their own. You know, the biggest kindness a Jewish woman could do is to have as many kids as she can. If Hashem will help her. If she wants it, Hashem should help her. Most Jewish women, that's not on their agenda anymore. A couple, that's it. Shine. It ended. Done my job. I feel my sense of eternity. And, you know, everybody else has a couple of, you know, but I really have to have a career. That's what I really have to have. So they you know, cause the goyim say you should have a career. So, you know, I can help so many people being a social worker. No, Hashem wants you to have as many kids as possible. That's what Hashem wants. Right? So we don't understand it. This is the way women are supposed to be. The way women are supposed to be. So that's an amazing, amazing lesson. And only Devorah can testify to this. Only, it has to be the godly prophecy to say what the emes is. So now you hear what's going on now. So because, and let's take this one step further now. So now you understand the amount of lishma for the sake of God that y'all had was probably unsurpassed in the annals of Jewish history and the annals of Jewish female history. Okay, there was no, I don't know, doesn't appear to be any other woman who went to this length. What? Maybe Esther. Okay, but that's already many years later. Maybe Esther. But up to this point in time, there ain't nobody. So Devorah's got a lot of nice things to say about her. But the key ingredient, it is so much lishma. There's so much for the sake of Hashem, that's all she is. Now you can begin to understand why the Chazal say, now who ultimately many generations came out from this ugly union between Sisera and Yael? We're told many, many years later comes Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva. Who is this Rabbi Akiva? Rabbi Akiva is the person that Hashem showed Moshe would be a person who would have been worthy that the Torah itself at Sinai should be given through him. But he wasn't born in that era. And what Moshe Rabbeinu was to the written law, so was Rabbi Akiva to the oral law, the Torah Sheba'al Peh. The oral law that became that new quantum leap of Torah being incorporated into our lives. The written law was given over, and following the law, it was one level of Torah incorporated into our lives, one level of understanding Hashem. The oral law took it to depths that was unheard of before. Who was the real master of that? Who was on the brought that? And it was all Rabbi Akiva. Now, what is the main prerequisite for one to succeed in going through the Talmud and understanding the depths of what this is all about? So when you guys, ladies, excuse me here, it's a little bit not in your realm now. We gave the ladies the first 40 minutes, give the guys the last 5 minutes. You know, when you guys, right, are learning a piece of Gemara, you know, what's going to motivate you to get through the seventh page of a discussion on an arcane topic of, you know, when a guardian is watching something, at what point does he become liable if he tilts the barrel and only takes a reverse of wine out and he doesn't take the rest? Should he be obliged if an accident happens to the barrel and to go back and forth? What is Rabbi? What is this Rabbi? What is that? Now, you know, like, why are you learning all this? What's going to motivate you to keep learning it and to find new insights into this? It's only one thing. It's lishma. You want to get closer to God. Because, you know, somewhere in the depths of this confusing mass of Talmud, I'm going to find HaKadosh Baruch Hu even deeper. And if you don't have that lishma, you ain't going to ever get through any Gemara. You say, this is hard, it's boring. Give me an art scroll history book. And now I'm learning Torah. You know, you have to really want Hashem. You have to look for Hashem. You have to seek for Hashem. This is the will of Hashem, and that has to drive you. And I want to find another layer of God's will buried deep in this complex, convoluted minutia of Jewish law. But the depths of Hashem is there. Now, where are you going to get the fortitude to do that? You have to have a mother who's willing to sleep with a pig. You know. I can't go to the Gemara class. I'm tired. Gemara is so boring. So hard. Let me just give me an English book and I'll just read it. You're not looking for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. You're looking for what's easy. Gemara like goes against the nature of the lazy man. You have to mamash be lishma to understand Torah Sheba'al Peh. That's what it's all about. So you can understand. So now. Got 2 minutes. I hope I can get it. So the Rama Mipano explains in Kabbalah. It says when it's called Aim Sisera, the mother of Sisera. Aim Kabbalistically represents the Shechina. It's the female aspect of Hashem. This Abba and Ima. So there's a female aspect of Hashem. What female aspect of godliness was in the mother of Sisera? The answer is lust. What? So the answer is, you know, there's nothing purely evil in this world. It's just, it's put in an evil place. What Sisera and Canaan and all these people had is a tremendous amount of lust. And they used the lust for the worst things in the world. They use the lust, shalom l'shem shemayim, not for the sake of heaven. But there's a general rule that there's nothing in this world that is inherently evil. It's just something extremely holy that was put in a very, very bad place. You know, so Sisera, the conqueror, the guy who could destroy, the guy who could pillage any woman he wanted, that came from a tremendous desire to have his pleasures in a very forbidden way. It's tava, lust. But lust itself is a neutral, it's only the English words we give it. Tava means a strong, strong burning yearning for something that doesn't have to be lust. Now, if it's somebody else's wife, then that's called lust. But if it's to understand the depths of a piece of Gemara, you know, can imagine, take Lahavdil, take any man who just thinks of one thing, sleeping with women. He has a lust for that. He puts a lot of energy and power into that. Now take all that energy and power and put yourself in front of a Gemara and try to understand the Gemara. You'll understand the Gemara really well. So what happens is it's like the final countdown. It's like Yoel, who represents taking the Midah in the way it's meant to be taken. And you got Mr. Lust. Sisera, it's just lust, lust, lust. And the mother of lust. The mother of Sisera, who's crying these crocodile tears. So all that power that Sisera had for lusting and taking all that holy energy, putting in the worst place. And when you put in the worst place, you even give it more energy. And then she cohabits with him. It's as if she extracts out in the metaphysical genome of all the power that this Sisera had, and she extracted it into her spiritual genome and say, I'm going to take this, all his power, and put it with my L'shem Shemayim. And if anybody raped anybody, she raped him of his spiritual powers. And sucked it all into herself, into the child that she would have and one day would be. And that's how you create a Rabbi Akiva. Who has a mother who has so much L'shem Shemayim, but now you need somebody with so much Tava, so much yearning, and that was came from the Goyish part of the world, and extracted and put it in. From that you get a Rabbi Akiva. Okay, there's more to talk about, but we gotta stop. This is how you're supposed to learn Navi. This is how you're supposed to learn Navi.
Another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, just press, that's it.